WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell a story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going to be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Yes, spring has indeed sprung, and it is time for Monday Night Talk. Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here as you are fighting the traffic on the way home and trying to shade your eyes from the solar glare. Thank you for keeping your dial set here. We got a great program for you after we check in with George Brown, the final traffic check of the evening. We'll get the show kicked off with State Senator Vinny DiMaceo. Actually, you know, right around the corner, next year, 2019, is when we are going to see the decommissioning of the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station. And recently, the Department of Public Health requested Entergy to comply with their radiological release criteria. And we're going to speak with the senator about this, get his thoughts and his concerns about what's going on with Pilgrim and its decommissioning, how that process is going. And also kind of get his thought on, you're going to have a couple of new state representatives here on the South Shore. The legislative group that has been together for many years. You've got individuals who are going off to other jobs. Jim Cantwell, as we had here recently, chatting about leaving the state, the House. Massachusetts House of Representatives, as is Tom Coulter, who is going to be stepping down to become the town administrator for Kingston. We'll get his thought on that. So that's coming up at 6:20. And then at 6:42, we're going to speak with Kurt Brendlinger. He is the CEO of Freebird Rides. You're like, what the heck is that? Well, Freebird Rides is something that is done in accordance with Uber, and it helps you be able to earn, if you happen to be out and about in restaurants in the Boston area, this app could be something that you might want to look into to be able to get drinks and meals, all because of their affiliation with Uber. So we'll look forward to talking with Kurt about that. Then the second hour, we have Jeffrey Yellenesia. Now, you may remember we had last week, we had Whitman Police Chief Scott Benton here, and we had Plymouth Selectman John Mahoney here, who were talking about adult recreational marijuana. And during the conversation, Jeffrey from Brennan Smoke Shop, you hear his voice on this station and many other stations here in the New England area. Well, Jeffrey called in. And I promised Jeffrey that he could have time to come on the program and give the other side of the coin. We do that on this show all the time. Somebody has an opposing view to somebody who was on. We give them the opportunity to get behind the microphone and share their opinion. Now, I may not agree with it. You may not agree with it. But you have an opportunity to hear at least how many other sides there are to a particular issue. And then we're going to close things out with the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass, as we will speak with Kim Kokatos and Chuck Giovannetti, talk with them about their upcoming event this Saturday night in Raynham.
Badman Ohan Jr. is going for his 7th win Saturday, April 28th at Plain Ridge Casino. Call Cliff at South Shore Boxing Club for tickets. 508-577-2358. 508-577-2358. 508-577-2358. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the leader of the tobacco industry in Massachusetts. Customers must have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store. Mike Badman Ohan Jr. is a wicked pissa fighter, dude.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
All right, our first guest. Love having this gentleman on from time to time, as he is, I think he's one of the senior members of the South Shore Legislative Delegation. I could be wrong, but of course, I see him that way. We have State Senator Vinny DiMacedo joining us. Senator, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Kevin, thanks for having me on.
Hey, so I gotta before we get into things about what's going on with Entergy and the power station, the nuclear power station, give me your thoughts on you got two members of the South Shore delegation that are going to be leaving the nest.
Well, I found out why it was because they were listening to your introduction, and you have Susan Bump, you've got the governor, you've got Stephen Lynch, and you didn't have Coulter and Cantwell, so they decided to leave.
Wow.
I'm sorry to break it to you, buddy. I'm kidding. But it is, listen, I've worked with them for many years. And yes, I think I'm the senior member. I have been in office for 20 years.
Yep.
So I think I might have been longer than most. I can't believe it's gone been 20 years, but wow, it goes quick. Worked closely with Jim Cantwell, worked closely with Tom Coulter. As you know, we're both different political parties.
Yep.
But the reality is when it comes to the South Shore, there's so much that we work on together, whether it's nuclear power, whether it's local aid, Chapter 90 funds, Chapter 70 funds. Oftentimes it's urban against suburban up on Beacon Hill. And so, you know, we have locked arms quite a bit in the world of politics over the many years, and enjoyed working with both of them. The good news is I think I'm going to continue to work with both of them in their new capacities.
Yep.
As Tom being the town manager of Kingston, and I still represent Kingston, and of course Jim Cantwell working for Senator Markey's office, and we always interact with the federal delegation all the time, and so having someone at his capacity there is certainly helpful to us.
I will have to say is I'm going to have to make sure I get you on the intro so you don't end up leaving us too.
I was just having fun there. I was just watching the excellent intro, by the way.
I have to so getting right into the meat and potatoes of this. We know that next year is when it starts, the decommissioning of Pilgrim, and it's being watched closely. I know that they've been having a lot of meetings. There's actually a committee that is put together to kind of follow as this happens. And the Department of Public Health is actually asking the parent company, Entergy, to make sure that they can comply with how they clean up. Give me your thoughts on this situation.
Well, first, let me thank the Nuclear Decommissioning Advisory Panel for the work that they've done. It's been for 10 months. These are people from every different background. They're volunteers. But what they are doing is they are assisting us in the Commonwealth with the process of decommissioning. It is not often that you decommission a nuclear power plant. And the ramifications are pretty significant when you do this. And I was fortunate. I had worked with my colleague Dan Wolf probably about two years ago trying to get this language in to create this commission because I knew what a big deal decommissioning was. And, for the community, we need to make sure that all our T's are crossed and I's are dotted when we do this. And that panel has been incredibly helpful. We've learned a lot from them. We've learned about things that we need to do to make sure that the community is safe. And these are over 3,000 spent fuel rods that are going to be moved from wet storage that in the nuclear from wet storage in the nuclear pool to dry cast storage, which is a big feat in itself. After that, the building is then going to be literally dismantled all the way down, all of the nuclear materials removed from that, and that's a pretty significant process. There's over $1 billion right now in a fund to start that process along. So, you know, we've got to make sure that we are paying close attention, and for us in the community, like, you know, that all of us that surround that nuclear power plant, which is our region in the South Shore, we need to make sure it's done right.
How much was learned about the plant up in Vermont, and how much is that going to be applied to this decommissioning here in Massachusetts?
Very helpful. As a matter of fact, the concept of the nuclear decommissioning panel came from the woman that was the chairperson, who we had met with on a local committee that we put on, and that was one of her major bits of advice to us to start the process earlier than they did, because you know, once this thing is closed, it pretty much becomes totally federal government, NRC, not a lot of local involvement, and it, at the end of the day, it still involves the local community, and we need to make sure it's done, you know, well, and that, you know, we're in a position where at some point that significant piece of property that sits right on the ocean, that's incredibly valuable, mm-hmm. becomes taxable property again, so that we can, you know, otherwise we lose that beautiful coastline that was in, you know, at least when they were there, there was a tax base. Once they close, that tax base virtually diminishes, and we need to get that place so it's totally decommissioned, cleaned up, and then hopefully could be something else in the future.
In your press release from your office, one of the things that you did, one of the quotes is that you actually thank the Department of Public Health in regards to their leadership. How important is their leadership in this whole process?
Well, you know, every agency has somewhat of a role.
Right.
DPH has a role, public safety has a role, MEMA. We have Department of Energy and Environmental Affairs, they have a role. One of the things that we learned is that it would be helpful to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts if we had one agency that oversaw the different, oversaw all of the different agencies dealing specifically with nuclear power, so that you spoke with one voice, so that you didn't have the Department of Environmental Affairs saying, oh, that's a DPH issue, you need to talk to them, and DPH saying, oh, that's MEMA. MEMA deals with that because it's public safety. And so that's something that I really probably didn't think specifically about until the decommissioning panel came up with that. And so we're going to be requesting, trying to create that concept in state government under the administration to be able to deal with all of the things that need to happen. Emergency planning zones, you know, funding, a cost. Like, for example, there are costs that are going to be borne because of having the nuclear power plant there that in the past Entergy would be able to give back to us. Where are we going to get the funds to address the concerns and the all of the things that one would have to deal with a nuclear power plant still in your backyard?
Yeah,
public safety, police, fire.
Right. Well, again, we're speaking with State Senator Vinny DiMacedo. We're talking a little bit about the decommissioning of the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station, which is supposed to get underway in 2019. I think one of the things I was going to ask you, and I don't know what you have for information regarding this, with DPH's request to Entergy in regards to complying with their radiological release criteria, is this supposed to be a response back from Entergy? Any kind of documentation that follows this request from the DPH?
Well, I think there's a federal standard, and the federal standard is like 25 millirams in regards to what the site needs to be cleaned up to. DPH says it needs to be cleaned up to 10 millirams, which is, you know, clearly over half less of what would be considered contaminated in the future. And, of course, the reason that you want that is, A, you want to bring the site back to, you know, virgin soil, that at some point in the future, you know, and this is for posterity, this is going to be a while away, but we want to make sure that that site can be reused for something else in the future. You know, business, it's at the end of these significant transmission lines, those stranded assets, and if the site is not deemed clean enough, of course businesses aren't going to want to go there. Right. We want to encourage other businesses to consider reutilizing the properties for the future so that we can, you know, as a community, recoup that tax base that we're going to be losing.
What are we looking at as far as cleanup? Has there been any kind of parameters set as to how long it's projected that it'll take Entergy to clean up that site to the specifications as where it won't be deemed contaminated?
Well, one of the things that I really tried to push is my desire to have what they call prompt decommissioning, which is you move right away into decommissioning. The law, the way the federal law reads, is there's a process that you can do prompt decommissioning, or you can do safe store. Safe store is basically closing the plant down, locking it up, and you could leave that plant up to 60 years, not tearing everything down. And of course, that to me is a really important issue, is to making sure that we move into prompt decommissioning. Because the sooner we get that down, and again, this is still long term,
right,
it will take at least 5 years after the last fuel rods are burnt before they can even be moved from the storage pool into dry cast storage until they cool down enough. And so, to me, you know, that's going to be the process. And then from there, that's when you start, dismantling the buildings and dismantling the storage pool and dismantling all of the stuff that was basically exposed to nuclear, to radiation.
So I guess my question would be, where does the federal government, where does the EPA play a role in this? Is it strictly just on our backs right now, and that $1 billion that's kind of squirreled away in a fund that hopefully that they don't have to be involved, or is it just a matter of the standards that they have set in regards to contamination that we only have to worry about?
Again, the agency that oversees this is really the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory
Right.
Commission. And, of course, the Department of Energy has a role to play here as well. The Department of Energy has been receiving dollars for many years to address the issue of what do you do with those spent fuel rods
Right.
after everything's closed down. And as I'm sure you've heard, Yucca Mountain was in Nevada, where they were supposed to have sent all the fuel rods from across the country and built this fuel repository there. That is something that, of course, I would like to see, but I will say that in probably 6 or 7 years ago, the Obama administration stopped the construction of Yucca Mountain, and thus we don't have, the Department of Energy does not have a plan on what to do with those spent fuel rods short of putting them in dry cast storage. And of course, from that perspective, myself as a who represents this community, we ultimately become a de facto spent fuel repository. And, you know, that's a burden on a community. And so, from my perspective, we need to work to make sure that we are protected as much as we possibly can be under those circumstances. And so that's something that we've been working with. We've been having conversations with people. How is this going to play out for us, and how can we be confident that at some point those spent fuel rods that go into dry cast storage at some point find a way to be shipped out of that property? And then you would have total decommissioning, because you can only do partial decommissioning. You can tear the building down totally, but you'll still have the dry cast storage pools, because as you can imagine, they're not easy things to move, and even if you could move them, then you need a place for them to go.
Is there anything I haven't asked you in regards to whether it's, you know, what the DPH is doing, or even the advisory panel that's involved with this? Anything I haven't asked but you feel is important to just kind of let the listeners know that your office is kind of paying attention to this and you're on it?
Well, I will say this. The entire delegation has been paid. It's not just my office.
Right.
It's the entire South Shore delegation.
Right.
We've been working. In creating this panel, we've learned a lot from them. We've got some things that we're trying to accomplish to make sure that the community is in the best position to deal with decommissioning. Nuclear power, as unique and creative as it is in fact radioactive material that is incredibly dangerous, and it has to be done properly. Now, there are some estimates it would be up to $1.4 billion to totally decommission this plant. As we know now, there's only $1 billion in there.
Right.
So that's a concern. Who's going to be responsible for the $400 million if that doesn't happen? Is it the federal government? We don't have all of those answers. We're trying to make sure we get those answers. There was a decommissioning that happened in Stowe, Massachusetts, but that was a different type of a plant. That was what they call a company-run plant that was under regulation before deregulation. Now we have what they call merchant plants. Merchant plants are privately owned. The money sits in there, and that fund specifically was supposed to grow to be able to do this decommissioning process. But we know there's $1 billion, and many of the estimates that we've heard said it's going to take $1.4 billion. So that difference is something I'm concerned about, because is Massachusetts responsible for that, or does it just go into Safe Store, which frankly, from my perspective, would be irresponsible for that to happen. I want those answers before it closes, so that we're in better stead. The decision was made in the early 70s in regards to bringing nuclear power here. It's had its costs and it's had its benefits, but now all of that doesn't matter. What does matter is we're going to decommission this. We're going to move all of those 3,000 spent fuel rods, very delicate process,
yep,
into dry cast storage, and we're going to make sure that all of the surrounding areas around that are cleaned up, and hopefully get to the place where hopefully 15, 20 years from now, it can be reutilized for something else that will be valuable to the town of Plymouth and the surrounding communities.
Well, Senator, I want to thank you for joining us and at least discussing where things are at this particular moment. And as there are updates, definitely would love to have you back on here to kind of give an explanation, maybe other members of the legislative delegation, the new faces and old, to kind of chat this up and at least pay attention to the process as it's happening.
Well, thank you again for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Enjoy the warm sunshine, and we'll talk to you soon, sir.
Thank you. Talk to you later. Bye.
There you go. There he is, State Senator Vinny DiMacedo joining us. I got to say, I think what we got to do is that was an excellent exchange between he and I as to the other members who are leaving. That'd be nice to kind of insert. What do you think, Ben? Yeah, Ben, it's time for you to shine for half a second here. I know you're monitor the board. Did you hear what I said? And your answer is? Oh, okay. And when we come back, we're going to speak with Kurt Brendlinger, talk a little bit about his new app here on Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, Chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And what we try to do with the program from time to time, as you know, it's more of a magazine show, which means that we can give you a variety of segments. Usually at the front end of the program, we like to try to do stuff that's local to our area, whether it's political issues. And then sometimes we like to delve into pop culture and items that maybe you don't know are on the horizon, but that we like to feature various guests to kind of talk about and give you a preview as to coming attractions. And I believe that this fits that mold. We actually have a gentleman who is the founder and CEO of Freebird Rides. We have Kurt Brenglinger. Kurt, welcome to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Kevin, thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
Now, you're not necessarily a Boston area guy, but I believe that you have some family that might be attending one of our prestigious schools.
Well, very kind of you to ask, but I actually feel like I'm a Boston type of guy because I spend a lot of money on tuitions here. I have both of my daughters have chosen Boston to come to college. At both of them have gone to BU. One of them graduated and one is still attending. So love the city, and they have fallen in love with the East Coast, so I may have lost them to Boston.
Well, and what's even better is that other than having family here, one of the concepts that we're going to have a conversation about happens to be something that it's actually being launched or it is being utilized in the Boston area. If you could kind of explain what your new app is in regards to Freebird Rides.
Happy to. So Freebird Rides is a Uber app. So we're affiliated with Uber, and it allows consumers to, they go on, they download it from the iOS store, and allows consumers to go on and be able to get free or discounted rides, cashback rides to bars and restaurants. And it's a new tool that allows bars and restaurants to promote their venue, and then at the same time allows them to kind of to acquire new customers, and also provide loyalty for, you know, customers that love to come to their establishment. While that whole piece works on top of the Uber platform, the cool part about it is we're also promoting a social good and promoting don't drink and drive. So we call it worry-free fun. It's go out, use our product, get free or discounted Uber rides, and be able to go have fun at the places you want and not have to worry about, you know, having your car.
How is this being accepted in regards to some of the restaurants and eateries in and around the Boston area, and how has it expanded to other parts of the country?
Great. So, actually, really, really well. It's kind of like how we picked Boston. So we tested. I came up with the idea a few years ago, which is a funny story that I should tell you about. But we ended up testing in Los Angeles. We had to take about a year to work through the the function of it, the flow of it. Then we had to go build it, which was complex. And then we tested in L.A. We started in the fall of last year. It took off there. We've done about 30,000 rides in Los Angeles with no marketing or PR or anything. And I just got really addicted to the Boston market. One, my kids being here, but also seeing just how Uber-centric it is, how rideshare kind of plays a role in the Boston area. It's a very dense market with all the, 54 college universities around. Just seems super ripe for testing. We turned it on very quietly, and we've done about 2,000 rides in the market already, but we're really now just coming out. Our formal launch was yesterday, and we've got about 100 participating bars and restaurants, and that number just continues to grow. It's a great product for bars and restaurants because they don't pay. It's a way to market free, free, and then they don't pay until the customer actually comes and transacts. So it's what we call pay for performance. So it's a very new way to look at how to market and get customers and providing a great service as well.
Do you find yourself, as you're talking about this, that you don't necessarily, it's not just you looking for folks to get the app, but are you also looking to lure prospective restaurants and bars to be a part of this growing theme?
For sure. I mean, luckily there's, strong word of mouth, and it takes a little while. Just look, taking some of the learnings from Los Angeles, it has, it just takes some time for the market to heat up and people start to understand. It's a little, new concepts. I use the description a lot of, taking a machete in the jungle and we're forging new ground in a very new idea, and it takes a little while for people to understand that. And then once they do, they seem to, at least, we're seeing that, they just quickly jump on the product and start to figure out how to use it as well. So we've got, one of the trends that's happened in the last, pretty much the last 12 months, which is that these delivery apps like Uber Eats, Grubhub, Seamless, they've been very popular. But what's happening is, from a macro perspective, is that consumer goes on, starts ordering all the food, and the gross revenue of these restaurants is up. But then the margins are way down. And what's happened is that all the food's going out. The apps are pretty expensive. And so a lot of the margin on the food is gone. But what's happening is that the consumer's not coming in, and they're not getting the alcohol sale, which is where they have a lot of the margin. And so it's been, a lot of these apps have been very damaging to the business. I have a friend in Los Angeles who owns a large restaurant group. And he was explaining it to me a few weeks ago. And he said, listen, I'm thinking about turning these things off because it's actually damaging my business. So we're the antidote. I said there's been like this desocialization of people as the millennials just decided, hey, I'm not going to go out as much, and I'm going to order in. And this is a way to, hey, let's get people social again. Let's get them out enjoying life together. And at the same time, like I said, we're promoting don't drink and drive, which is an important part of this whole product that we've built.
And you talk about the partnerships that you're looking to build with restaurants and bars, but that also is inclusive of beer brands too, yes?
Yeah, so what's really exciting is the industry is it's just a couple components to this. So the an alcohol owner, a brand owner, is not allowed by law to bring a consumer into a bar or restaurant. They're only allowed to provide a ride home. The bar or restaurant can market and bring people in, but the alcohol brand can't. And so what's happened is, and then on top of that, there's an obligation in the industry for all of those owners to promote responsible consumption and don't drink and drive. And so what's been really exciting is the alcohol industry has been jumping all over this because they've never had a meaningful way to effectively give someone don't drink and drive. And they've been able to put messages out there, which they've done very aggressively, and it's important to them. But they've never had a real effective way to actually do it. And so we were, over St. Patty's Day, we started with Guinness and Guinness is providing $5 contribution to your to the ride home in both Boston and L.A. where we are, and you're going to see the industry continue to support that with other brands going forward. They're very excited about it. There's no obligation to buy a Guinness. It's just Guinness, hey, providing something nice for you know, for the consumer.
And again, we are speaking with the founder and CEO of Freebird Rides, Kurt Brendlinger. And this is a Uber-affiliated app, partners with bars and restaurants, offering customers cash rewards for visiting via Uber. I want to kind of throw one other thing in there, how cognitive you are, and we'll kind of get in a little bit, we'll delve deeper into your background to kind of fortify your, you know, your how you are as a business person and somebody who, you know what you're doing. This isn't the, you know, you happen to come up with this idea one day and you're still in the dump. You're somebody who has, you have a resume that I'd like to talk a little bit about. But in this, in the Boston area, and you're talking about drinking and drive, you know, this is something for responsible drinking and driving. But we also, we soon in the coming months, Massachusetts, just like Colorado and the state of Washington, passed, you know, adult recreational marijuana. And that could be something that is also something that maybe your organization can kind of keep in mind in regards to driving responsibly, because a lot of law enforcement people are saying to themselves, how do we, you know, how do we make sure that people are being responsible when they're utilizing this new industry, so to speak? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously it translates right over to the increasing marijuana acceptance in the country. And we're very, very supportive of like, we call worry-free fun. Is like, listen, you know, if you use Freebird and use it regularly, the cool part about it is the car's never left the garage, right? Because there's no way for it to go. So we actually provide Freebird home too, and the alcohol industry is providing someone a ride home if they feel that they need to take advantage of that based on however their day or night has gone. But I think you're going to see, you know, we support any of these industries that like marijuana, as you brought up, and our tool and our app is a great solution for that, not driving impaired from either marijuana or alcohol.
If you would kind of delve into, I mean, you're an entrepreneur, you're somebody with a lot of business and corporate experience, kind of talk to, if you will, draw on that as to how you've been able to come up with something like Freebird Rides and some of the other ventures that you're involved with.
Sure. So, you know, I've been lucky enough to have three careers. I was a television producer for 15 years. I had the opportunity after that to go on the investment side, investing in the entertainment media companies. In the last 15 years, been more involved in entrepreneurial ideas. You know, I laugh all the time. I said that with friends and many other fellow entrepreneurs, I said, I don't consider being an entrepreneur an attribute. It's a disease. And I said, because it's, you just, you know, you come up with these complex ideas. You know, a lot of times they're not good. So you have to, you know, with time, you have to slowly figure out that they, you know, before you really dive in, have you thought it through, thought about the risks? And then a really good entrepreneur doesn't listen to anything that his mind or anyone else is saying. Is they just put their head down and go. And I've been super lucky with time, and particularly with Freebird Rides, excuse me, to be able to get really talented people around me, smarter than me, that really help drive these companies forward. And so it's been, there's always been a confluence, you know, every single experience layers on top of another experience. And I think doesn't necessarily mean you get smarter as you get older, but you certainly have a different lens, you know, with time after having gone through a lot of experiences.
You talk about
if that answers your question.
No, it does. But again, it kind of, for folks who are listening to this conversation, they kind of get a little bit of a behind the scenes instead of the individual who is talking to us about this fantastic app and its connection with Uber, but they also kind of get a little bit more of an idea of you as the person who is, you know, the founder of Freebird Rides. Yep. And that's what we're trying to provide here on Monday Night Talk. I will say that you're quite modest in regards to talking about TV production. In my notes here, it says that you are the senior advisor to Three Ball Productions, and I'm kind of a fan of Three Ball Productions.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, it's an amazing company started by, I was partnered with one of the founders for many years, 10 years, in a production company together. And then he went on, and when I went to go do the fund, he went on with another friend of ours and built a very successful company. I mean, they're probably, arguably, one of the top three or four reality TV production companies in the business. You know, their biggest hits was The Biggest Loser, which was a transformational television. And this is what they focused on, is, you know, real transformational television. And I think, you know, it's a little bit in the blood of all of us that in terms of, you know, even as I look at business and always looking for ideas to help people. And I think, you know, they have another hit that's on the air right now, which is called Bar Rescue.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's kind of affiliated with what we're doing here, is how do you, you know, go in and, in that case, transform, you know, bars in which, you know, have kind of lost their footing or their customers, and how to get them back on track. I mean, it's funny, to your audience, I think it's important to understand, is that ideas come up all, for me, we keep an open mind, they come up all the time, and the idea for Freebird Rides really came, I'd taken my daughter to Coachella, I dropped her at the concert, and I went to go play golf, and I got to the 19th hole, and I was having a beer, and I said to the waitress, I said, hey, where should I go to dinner tonight? And she said, I go to one of these three places. And I said, great, what's your favorite? And she goes, Smithies. And I go, what do you like about Smithies? And she goes, they picked me up. And I was like, what? And I got out to the car, and I reached over, and I grabbed my buddy's arm, and I said, oh, my God, she just gave me a $1 billion idea. And that idea was, I got kind of struck by lightning three times in a row, was, oh, could I make Uber free? And how can I make Uber free? Ooh. And I started thinking, like, God, could I use the rideshare platforms to let businesses, I'm just sitting in front of a, you know, a bar at the golf course, could I let a bar or restaurant, that vertical, use rideshare as a tool to get customers and to also provide a service to loyal customers, not just new customers, loyal customers.
Right.
And that was the underpinnings of what became this idea. And, you know, we've raised a lot of money, and it's very exciting to watch this thing come to life from a simple little question at a golf course, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And again, we are speaking with Kurt Brendlinger. He is the founder and CEO of Freebird Rides. We're talking a little bit about this new Uber-affiliated app. And it's a great idea. Kurt, if folks want to find out more information, I don't know if you have a website, if you're just saying, hey, just if you will, go and get the app and learn more. What do you want to tell our audience?
I'll save something better for that, since, and then something special for your audience, which is go to the iTunes store and download it. Freebird Rides is the name. You can go online. There is a website that you can see as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the simple is free to download. And if you, what we're doing is just as a special launch in Boston, which is our first, you know, market that we're launching into, is if people download the app and take their first ride in this month of April, after they take their first ride, we'll deposit another an extra $5 in their account just as a thank you. You know, go have a drink on us. And we, you know, love to get people out just using it. So that's how to do it. So we'd love you to have download it and go have some fun.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you very much for being a guest on the program. And as this further develops, or if you come up with any more billion-dollar ideas, you can always feel free to talk to your friends here in the Boston area, especially here at 95.9 WATD on Monday Night Talk.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, Kevin.
You got it. We're going to step aside for just a couple of moments, but when we come back, more program Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD-FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
Mike Badman Ohan Jr. is going for a seventh win Saturday, April 28th at Plain Ridge Casino. Call Cliff at South Shore Boxing Club for tickets. 508-577-2358. 508-577-2358. 508-577-2358. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the leader of the tobacco industry in Massachusetts. Customers must have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store. Mike Badman Ohan Jr. is a wicked pissa fighter, dude.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back. The second hour of Monday Night Talk. Later on in the program, we'll speak with Kim and Chuck from the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass, located in Brockton. But right now, we got my guy, Jeffrey Yelenesian. And he's here, as I explained early in the show, last time we were here together, all of us, you at home, or driving around in the car, we had a discussion in regards to adult recreational marijuana. We had a caller. Now, depending on the segment, we may not take calls. But I saw who it was, and usually if Jeffrey is calling, he has it's a substantial comment or question. So Ben, a.k.a. the 420 Wookie, says, hey, do you want to have one? I'm like, yeah, put him in. And I promised you, Jeffrey, that you would be able to come in here and give a counter in regards to adult recreational marijuana. It's the rage in some communities. In others, wah, 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 not so much.
That was good.
Wasn't it? I practiced before I came in tonight. So, you are here to give us your proponent, so to speak.
Well,
is that inaccurate?
I mean, accurate.
You're proponent for specific reasons, and I thought there were good reasons.
Well, I'm in business, so.
But you're also somebody who is a member of a community, and you know these days, this is right around the time of year. The communities are deciding their fiscal budget for the next fiscal year that starts on July 1st.
So, Kevin, when you're talking about something that, if it's banned, is going to cost the town potentially millions of dollars in tax revenue, you'd think that the town officials would send a letter to your house saying, we're voting on this, and if it doesn't pass, we're not going to get the money. You know, and that's what I dealt with in Freetown is that you almost forgot the vote was going on unless you were paying attention. And it's funny, the day the vote was a Saturday. Saturday morning, I'm in the bathroom literally on Facebook, and I see it on the Freetown Police Department's Facebook page because I think they probably want it. They want the money.
They want the money or they don't? Because
well,
I think
Freetown's got to put in a new police station. You know, everybody needs money, Kevin. And last week we talked, I just, you know, from my experience,
hey,
you go to a town meeting and they're like, well, how are we going to pay for this? How are we going to pay for that? How are we going to pay for this? And I didn't know about Whitman's situation.
Right now they have a deficit right now.
I had no idea.
They're working through it. I mean, there's ways
you could
to
assume.
Be able to...
I assumed.
Yeah.
You know, as that's my experience. And it's, and Chief Benton said, you know, oh, well, we've been dealing with spillover from Brockton for years. And I said, well, now you're going to have different type of spillover because the tax dollars that should be staying in Whitman are going to spill into Brockton. You know, it's happening. And it's funny because you deal with everybody knows somebody, you know, that is a recreational person. It's hard for them. They've probably been smoking or vaping weed for years. It's hard for them to really grasp that this is really happening. Yes, it's actually happening. It's legal.
That's exactly what we were talking about along the break.
Wait. Who's that? What's that voice?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I decided I might want to chime in a little bit.
See,
is that okay?
Earlier in the show, when I went to him to ask him a question, the cat caught his tongue. But now Ben is chiming in. Ben, I would take it that you are a proponent of recreational marijuana?
Aye, sir. I am in favor.
Okay, so you are an adulterer. Okay. And that's not a bad thing. Again, it... Wow. Wow, he found sound effects, too.
When this happens, Kevin, you're going to be really surprised at who partakes of the recreational. The idea is that people are not... That aren't going
to... People don't have to be afraid of it anymore. The stigma that comes along with it.
But you get what I'm saying? Like, people that have been smoking... We'll call it gray market weed at this point for years.
Yep.
It's hard for them to grasp that, hey, I can actually do this and it's okay. I'm not going to get in trouble. And you can actually talk about it now. And we talk about, you know, the business and how if somebody came in and said they were going to buy a pipe for weed. We went through the drug paraphernalia with the town of Pembroke many years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you said anything about weed, we're not selling you the pipe. Sorry. Can't sell it to you. It's illicit. Well, in the state of Massachusetts, weed's not considered illicit anymore, so it doesn't fall under 94C's. I don't know if it's a law, 94C, not an amendment.
Is that Mass General Law?
Mass General Law,
94C. And I want to throw this out there, is that talking with Jeffrey prior to the show, we had talked about possibly fielding calls. So, folks... When we prompt you, want to call in, and want to give their take, you'll take it whether it's pro or con?
Yeah.
Okay, because you're a conversationalist.
Yeah.
You absolutely are. What is your thoughts? It is interesting to watch communities.
I'm looking at the money situation. Right. It's like, how can you leave that money on the table?
It's madness to everyone that did.
Whitman's going to lose.
But here's the thing, and I can talk to Whitman because I pay attention to what goes on in a shared communities. And what's you're going to find this interesting is
I'm a Panther dude.
I know you are. Yeah. I know you are. But here's the thing that's funny is Whitman put a bylaw in place in regards to prohibit adult recreational marijuana, the retail sales, and the growing. Hansen, however, did nothing of the sort and will have to decide.
July or something.
Yeah, they got to decide where in fact they want to do zoning. Where will they want it to be zoned in regards to retail or cultivation? Do they have an industrial part of the town? You know, you can't have it near schools. It's common sense. There's certain areas you can't put it, but
any places you can put it.
It's worthy of a conversation. But that's that community and those two communities, Whitman and Hanson, they share a school district.
I think from my opinion, though, that it's going to be legal and it's going to happen. I think the sooner we become desensitized, the better.
I think a lot of people already are desensitized to it. I mean, it's been not as huge a deal as it's been in the past years. And, I mean, someone like myself, I'm 30 years old, and I remember, you know, when I first got into it myself years and years ago, you couldn't even so much as say it out loud, lo and behold, think it.
Right.
And it was some pretty heavy penalties that would come along with it. But, it just was not.
But I'm going to throw something out there. And there's a show that is on here, I think on Thursday nights, Dr. Joe. Joe is somebody who works for High Point. We've had him on this program before, talking about Drug Story Theater.
Wonderful program, by the way.
Dr. Joe Schrand. And he will be one of the first people who will tell you there's an argument that is there that marijuana is a gateway drug. There are people who believe, and some say that there is clinical evidence that it can be a gateway drug for harder drugs. What do you say to what do you say to that?
Because
we do have an ongoing opioid epidemic right now.
But that's not
we're still tackling.
Weed, you know what I mean?
But did you hear what I said though?
Yeah. Yep.
A gateway drug that. There are individuals that say, I started with marijuana. Before you knew it, I was seeking harder drugs.
I have this theory that if it wasn't instinctual, people wouldn't do it. So in other words, I think that when we were cavemen and we were hungry, we were looking for something else to do instinctively. Chew on a stick or smoke a cigar, chew on some leaf. Pine cones.
Figuring it out.
Just
Rocks.
It's that instinct, the instinct, like the hunter-gatherer, like my diet, they call me the warrior diet or hunter's diet. I don't eat all day. I get home at night and I feast. And that's over millions of years of evolution, you know, hunting all day. And hopefully we get food and we eat at night, go to sleep and do it all over again the next day. So, but as far as a gateway drug, now this was interesting. Bridgewater was weighing what they were going to do, and they put in a bylaw to ban tobacco sales. And we all the industry, tobacco industry, got together and went to the town meeting, and you find out that one of the board members put up the bylaw, because hearing all of the all the people against the marijuana talking about how tobacco is a gateway drug and marijuana is a gateway drug. And he said, well, you guys are going to ban marijuana sales. Well, all I heard about was tobacco, so why wouldn't you put the same ban on tobacco? And they all got upset and they threw the bylaw out. But the reason he passed, the reason he put it up there was because of the weed. So it's really interesting to see towns go through this, and that was the town meeting that I referred to. Is you see them, you know, talking about this and that, how are we going to pay for this, and we got to do something with that, and then they throw the money right out the window. It's happening, guys. You know, where are your taxpayers going to purchase the legal product? Are they going to purchase it down the street in Whitman, down the street in Hanson, in Brockton? You know, I got a little offended, Kevin, but Brockton. Yeah, and other cities have a bad reputation. I have a store in Brockton. Some of the best, that's my favorite store. That's like my store. It's where my office is. And to have somebody say something like, you know, Brockton spilling over into Whitman, I'm like, whoa, wait a second. What kind of people are in Whitman? You know, they're spilling into Brockton. It's like, well, now the tax dollar, you know, they're spilling out of Brockton into Whitman, you know? And they people generalize people that consume recreational marijuana and assuming that they're heroin addicts or they're some of the low class people.
But do you think this is an urban versus suburban scenario? Is that what you're saying?
No. I think that in today's day and age, and they've done research, 75% of the people, they say, are consuming recreational marijuana, whether mm-hmm. it be gray market, black market, or legal in Colorado. Mm. And that's the truth. And it's hard for people to grasp the reality of the situation, but the real reality is Ben maybe spends $100 a week out of his money. He pays taxes on it. He gets his money. He goes to his guy. That money goes under the table and it never comes back on top of the table. No control. Mm. Isn't it better to have control of something? Then you can at least decide, hey, we want it here. We don't want it there. We want this tax rate on it. We want, you know, higher tax rate on it. Now you have control. But the idea of thinking like, Ben, if you don't mind me using you as an example, $100 a week, that's $5,000 a year. 75% of the population spending money on marijuana every week. How much money? 75% of the population in Massachusetts spending $100 a week. That's a lot of dough.
Mm. But this still
illegally.
But you're talking
no control.
But with law enforcement, it's a matter of now. It's an adjustment. It's a readjustment where you're talking about something that has been prohibited. That is, it's been illegal. There were years ago that we had a war. We had a war on drugs. It wasn't just a drug. It was all drugs.
Marijuana,
cocaine.
Everybody,
you name it.
We spent
trillions of dollars as a country.
And what do we get for it?
Fighting this war, right? Exactly. What did we get for it?
Honestly, the drugs won the war, folks. I mean, look where we're at. Look at the opioid epidemic. Look at everything else.
Well,
not even the recreational stuff. But look what's going on.
Hold on. The opioid argument. That could be. You know what? Folks might argue and say, that's something that the pharmaceutical companies pushed on physicians and that physicians utilized, hoping that it was going to be something that would help give somebody long-term comfort.
And you have big pharma to blame for it.
But here's the thing, though, is that there can be a conversation to be had that the pharmaceutical companies are just as wrong. And we have communities now that are actually suing, the pharmaceutical companies.
Big Pharma.
Because, right, exactly, because
they're the ones doing this.
They knew.
They knew. They designed it that way. That's the thing that's absolutely wild about it.
The dentist gave me my first painkiller.
Really?
And it really only takes one.
It's a common story, but you know...
And it was for something that, I mean, yeah, I get a root canal. Do you really need painkillers? They take the nerve out of the tooth. Do I need painkillers? No. Yeah. And I'll tell you my recent experience with Kevin. You know, I'm not a young man anymore. I had my kids, took care of that. They said, you know, I've been off of those things a lot of years now. I said, do you want these? And I said, do I need them? No, I'm feeling like I need these when I'm walking out the door. I said, no, you don't need them. And yeah, you really don't need them.
Mm. Ben?
Yeah, I just wanted to put an opinion out there as far as the gateway drug debate. There's also something that I think a lot of folks don't either understand the whole concept of or the reality of, is that each and every one of us, whether you're an elderly person, child, in between, adult, whatever, we all have a thing called willpower. And we make choices for ourselves, and we have to weigh out the information that we're given, whether it's environmental or known or learned or whatever. Everyone makes a choice for themselves.
But here's,
so as far as the gateway...
Hold on, stop. Stop. I'm going to stop you for a second, and I'll let you finish. But here's the thing is that we all have our individual addiction triggers. And it could be gambling. It could be...
For me, it's all the same.
It could be eating. It could be... We all have... It's our different triggers. And that's what it is. Willpower, if you have an addiction and if you are addicted to something, I don't know how much willpower will have. You know, you have to get to a certain point where you're like, okay.
Even less when I'm drinking.
Yeah, I mean, typically when you get to that point, the willpower battle has already been mostly lost at that point.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put the phone number out there. And if folks want to call in, they want to weigh in, pro or con. Either way, let's keep Ben busy. 781-837-4900 is the number, 837-4900. And again, let's if this happens to generate some interest, and I see that I get enough people who are calling in, ask your question, or, you know, we'll have a little bit of debate. I don't want to have somebody stay on the phone lines for the entire 20 minutes that we got left for the segment.
I don't want to go buy the application for the recreational RMD license.
Okay.
The April 1st, it opened up for medicinal dispensaries and economic development. And if you were adversely affected by the previous marijuana policies, in other words, if you were the son or daughter of somebody that was busted for possession,
mm-hmm.
and you were in a certain town that they deemed were economic development towns, Abington was one of them, then you could get first crack, because they want small business to thrive in this industry, in this rush, in the boom, the green rush, they call it.
I see Ben is kind of tied up on the line now. I don't know if somebody is looking to ask a question or what's happening here. So I'm trying to... Is it just somebody who wanted to weigh in and bend your ear for a minute, Ben? Is there something you
we're trying to. It's a signal issue. They want to get their comment across, but the signal's not strong enough. They're down by the Citroen waterfront, I hear.
Oh, all right. Well, come inland. Come inland. I want to hear from you. 781-837-4900 is the number. If you do, in fact, have an opinion one way or the other, me, I like being neutral. So I want to hear everybody's point of view. Jeffrey has an opinion on this. He sees this.
But don't you think that, I mean, I keep going back to the town of Freetown, not really doing a great job of getting the vote out. And then they misword the so this is the way I understand it. It's already passed.
So it was a ballot question.
It passed. It's legal for sale in your town. And what they're doing is they're passing amendments to that. And when you go to vote, it's, would you vote in favor of this amendment that would ban recreational sales? So if somebody goes in there, yeah, I want legal marijuana, and they vote yes, they're actually voting no. So no means yes. You know, no, you don't want to support the amendment to the bylaw, to the law.
But here's what's interesting. And again, we had Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter here a couple of weeks ago and shared with our audience that in fact Brockton was going to be, it was going to be that community that was going to break something. You're talking about an administration that has been in the forefront of different venues to try to generate revenue. Whether you're in favor of any of those methodologies or not, I mean, one of them was to bring a casino to Brockton. Well, it wasn't approved by the Mass Gaming Commission. Voters in Brockton, it was a close vote, but at least they were trying to do something. This is another avenue. The mayor brought it forth. I believe the city council has said yes. The 3% is going to be something that we're going to look forward to. Ben, did you have something you wanted to say?
I had a thought on something else, and it just escaped me while we were trying to take care of that caller.
Isn't
there.
Isn't it like a residual of, like, if you smoke too much, like, you kind of get forgetful?
You know, typically when you're trying to be professional, you take it to the end of the night for these kinds of festivities, so that has nothing to do with it on this one.
Those THC gummy bears you've been eating.
Hey, gummy bears?
Interesting to talk about the RMD. In the RMD bylaw, gummies and candies are not considered food items, so any RMD will be able to sell them.
But see, that's the other thing. That's
as long as they're specifically labeled so that kids aren't getting them. They're behind the counter, I assume, or somehow, somewhere, there's some kind of check that
it's
kids
really
aren't getting them.
Ben, because people are not. I'm a parent. I have two little kids, and
I'm a grandparent. I have four.
I think I'm a great parent, but even great parents
make mistakes.
Yeah,
we make mistakes.
Yeah, and I don't think
we're only humans.
Think anything is going to, you know, I think that a child could experience something that they're really not supposed to experience until, you know, they get older. And when you eat that stuff, it can be really intense. And that's what, when the senators from Mass went out to Colorado to tour all the dispensaries, they were talking about how all these people that don't consume marijuana are trying it out and they're eating it. And they're eating too much, and they didn't think that the money they were getting was covering the ambulance rides to the hospital for these people that never consume.
Yeah, that's the dangerous part for sure. Folks that don't have a high tolerance or have no experience with it at all. You know, a lot of people are venturing into this solo. They don't necessarily have someone in their life that can educate them on these kinds of things before they dive right in.
I haven't done this for years, but I'm gonna do it.
Did it once in college though, years ago.
Again, we're speaking with Jeffrey Yellenesian, of course, a proud sponsor of Monday Night Talk and a lot of things here on this station. Jeffrey, of course, a proud business owner of Brennan Smoke Shop, but also somebody who, you know, wants to carefully weigh the benefits of this industry coming into Massachusetts. We're not talking about medical marijuana. That's something that's already rolled out there and already being
utilized. Look at these
utilized.
People that, these medicinal dispensaries that have medicinal licenses, they never opened the dispensary, and now they have first crack at recreational licenses, and the medicinal community is a little nervous that they're going to be selling recreational retail before they are medicinally. It's all right. Wild.
All right, so we got Diane in Marshfield. Diane, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Hi there. It's great to always hear you guys, and I call a lot on different subject matters, but I want to take you back to a thought, and maybe you guys can bring this into society, and we won't have a lot of dead people from overdoses. So here, I'm a farmer's daughter, so we group every plant that possible for people and food and animals and all kinds of things from North Dakota, Minnesota. Those are my mom's side of the family. So I went there in the summers, and learning about plants, and I remember being in the fields, and we were chasing, you know, cows around, and we had corn, and they wouldn't eat the marijuana plants. Now, I don't know if it's because it was got too woody. You ever get herbs and they grow too high? We call it woody, get thick stalks, right? So then they don't taste good. They go into the other direction. They go into the rot, going back to the earth. So one of the things that I notice in society, I've been rescuing for over 35 years. I started off rescuing people from alcohol and drugs, and then I've gone on to tobacco and all kinds of stuff. And I go on the streets and I rescue people and I talk to them and I say, listen, if you could have one wish, health, wealth, or wisdom, which one would you pick? And I always get them, so I give them all three wishes. And I send them off to a place to get education, to help themselves understand their bodies and health. So why don't we stop saying on Friday night, You got to go out, and the only way to celebrate is to have this in your, you know, hand and this in your mouth, and this is what the beverage will be, and this will be that. So if we stop dictating and setting the stage that you have to get to a certain mindset using beverages of chemicals, or at the time when I was young, tobacco and marijuana in the 70s. So why don't we just say, you know, you can be actually go out the door, you can be happy, you can dance, you can walk, you can have kids, you can have everything. You don't have to get to that chemical imbalance, what I call it. So when I rescue people, I say, listen, you're chemically imbalanced, and you might need to get that stuff out of your body, so we're going to bring you over here and get you safe and get it out, rather than you're high, wasted, stoned, and all that. I guarantee you, we'll have a safer society. We won't have people pursuing that high. When you pursue a high, which is a false delusion, you get chemicals in your brain, it shuts it down, and you're functioning, but you're not reasoning. And when you don't reason, you kill people, and you kill yourself.
If I could I interject just for half a second? And that is, you look at something like alcohol. Look at Prohibition, and look what happened. You know, it's the will of your culture. Who knows what would have happened if Prohibition... Hold on, let me finish.
Yep.
If Prohibition was successful, you know, and if officials stayed with it, what would our society be like today? But they weren't. They relented, and they allowed alcohol to be back in our society.
Yeah, they did it the wrong way. First of all, education. If I tell you that my great-grandpa in Italy had to take grapes, and grapes, that, even business-wise, why would you take perfectly good grapes and make them rotten, add yeast, and then it goes yeast poop? So if you want yeast poop in your brain, you got yeast poop in your brain, and it causes a very bad chemical, actually deteriorates your whole body. So my great-grandpa could have grown grapes, sold grapes, but somebody said, no, you're going to step on those damn things, and you're going to make us into a beverage. But the beverage was rotten. And then someone said, you know, that's how it's supposed to taste. So when you drink those rotten grapes, you're supposed to say yummy, even
like
though
tobacco.
Your tongue says
it's
yucky.
It's like
so
it
listen
wasn't
to
really
your
good.
Feelings. Yeah, listen to your feelings. Listen to your taste buds. Mm. I might be able to sit down and munch down on a whole, you know, garden of marijuana, and I won't even have a. I won't. You know, my body will digest it appropriately. But your body, you got to listen to your own tongue. You got to listen to your own taste buds, and that will help people not go further. So if you stop the game of high wasted stone and say, look it. Comfortable, contentment, happy, healthy. Start using that language semantics. You'll stop this little merry-go-round. Now they want to put drugs in people, right? To supposedly
to
take care
the
of the detoxification. That's not the way you do it. Hydration, nutrition, and say, look it. Don't drink yeast poop.
Diane, okay. You've been a fantastic caller. Thank you
Thank
for calling
you.
In.
Okay, bye-bye.
It was Diane from Marshfield, 781-837-4900. If you want to weigh in on this, you want to talk about yeast poop or wine or
I've never
alcohol.
Heard it explained that way in my life.
I thought it was fantastic.
She knows what she's talking
about.
It
was articulate. It was very well said.
But that's true. We do try to do things. We as a society... She's right to a degree. We
but
do.
If it wasn't instinctive,
we chase that euphoria. That it, whether it's you know smoking a cigarette,
it's
whether it's drinking a glass of wine or scotch,
just get bored.
It could be a combination
go to work, get up, go to work.
First, it's the escape
it's
from reality for
but
a lot
Friday
of people.
Friday night's different. Saturday night, something wants different. I get pizza on Friday. I'm a vegan, but we eat pizza on Friday night. That's like my thing. I don't
rebel.
Like,
Rebel. He is a rebel.
Sober too, by the way.
He is a rebel. But if somebody wants to, again, we'll take calls. 781-837-4900. We'll take them up until 20 of 8 when, like I said, we got Kim Kokatos and Chuck Givinetti from the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass. And they're talking about their
so what else
the big
you
gala coming
the...
up on Saturday night.
Do you got any questions about the...
Well, no, let's continue this conversation. You know, one of the things that's been interesting and that I hear... folks, law enforcement folks saying is you look at it's still while you're saying it's legal, not according to the federal government. The federal government sees all marijuana as being illegal. Now I'm not sure if you know this or not, but U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts actually has put the question to the Trump administration about removing the stigmatism of it being illegal.
Never should have been there in the first place, quite honestly.
Well, again, it's a matter of, you know, the studies that are done, there are so many conversations. You could sit here today and go, oh, nothing's going to happen. I'll just get munchies afterwards. Other people see it and believe other things.
Absolutely. And obviously, everyone is entitled to their opinion, and a lot of them end up usually being true, matter of fact.
Some
people just don't have the right.
Some of these cons you can bury with statistics from the states that have legal recreational marijuana at this point. Drug overdoses, you know, are down in these states. DUI accidents and fatalities are down in these states. You know,
they're down, but I honestly think that.
Ambulance rides are up, I guess, though.
I'm talking about, if you talk about addiction, I mean, I think that's going to be the numbers that we see. I think they're going to be cyclical. They're going to be up and down.
I think that the people that are pro-marijuana just hate to have their marijuana in the same category as heroin, crack, cocaine, you know. It's not the same. Even alcohol.
But it's still a drug.
Caffeine.
Anything you put in your body is a drug.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of drugs. People, you know.
I can't tell you how many times I hear that. Oh, you drink coffee. That's
Kevin,
a drug.
You know, coffee is poisonous to the human body. Did you know this? Did we talk about this?
We've talked about this.
Milk?
Reason that
same thing?
The milk is, too. The reason that coffee makes you want to go poop is because your body is trying to get it's trying to get that poison out of your body. And your body goes into hyperactive to try and process and get that out of it as soon as possible. So, you know. But I still go back to the instinctive, you know, if it wasn't instinctive, people wouldn't do it. They wouldn't smoke marijuana. They wouldn't smoke tobacco. I mean, I watch Drugs, Inc. You ever seen what they go through to process drugs? Like
real drugs, like bad drugs.
Yeah, like...
It's crazy.
The guy's in a wooden box, weed whacking the cocoa, and then they pour gas on it and then press it out and then they put it in a microwave. That whole process, like, how did you figure that out?
Who is the first one to even think of this?
But do you realize that
it's medicine if you chew
it? At the turn of the 19th century, heroin was something that was supposed to supplant morphine, because you had people getting
opium was the heroin was just a derivative of the opium.
The heroin was used until they figured out that they were the addictive qualities.
But I mean, if you look at some of the bottles that have survived to this day, like, you look at the ads.
That's like saying, I didn't know inhaling smoking in my lungs was bad for me. I'm like, dude, after 20 years of smoking and you sound like this, and like me, I'm like, I probably shouldn't be smoking butts anymore. You need somebody
a good gravelly voice.
Yeah, no, but you need somebody to tell you that. Like, you
know, it's common sense.
Yeah, smoking's bad. Yeah, inhaling smoke into your lungs, putting powder up your nose is, you know,
definitely bad. Okay,
you know, there's a lot
did
of
you
bad.
Just South Park,
definitely did. Okay,
okay,
yeah.
Again, 781-837-4900. We are going to be on this topic for a few more moments, and then we will.
I keep going back to
change. We will step aside.
I just thought that was so poetic that I called and just said, hey, out of the blue, like, you know, towns need money, and I didn't even know about Whitman's situation. And I think that if the townspeople knew they were looking at a $900,000 deficit, they may have voted a little differently.
Well, I will tell you this, that there was a situation when the town was looking at a grow facility for medical marijuana, a group of people came out and were like, we don't want that. We do not want this in our community. We don't want this. And it's like, this is already in process.
But that's why in an American democracy, we don't listen to just three or four people for the entire group.
But I'm saying I don't disagree with you. There are people, I mean, tonight, Marshfield's doing town meeting. Now, you know, if they have a quorum.
How many people showed up to that vote?
Here's what's funny. It's funny you say that. You know, town meetings, you know, unless there's a school item, if there's going to be voting on a school budget, you don't see, you're lucky if you get a quorum. You're lucky if you see a quorum of 150, 200 people.
But they'll send a letter out, say, oh, we got voting on an override. They want another million or $2 million.
You'll see 400, 500 people show up.
You'd think that they would treat the marijuana the same way, because you're talking about millions of dollars.
You are, but there are other things that come with it than just the smokable. You're talking about a shop will be able to sell the edibles, and people are afraid that your kids, you said it, as a parent, you know, you have to worry that your kids are smart, and, you know, the last thing you want to do is have them
laws on the candy and it not being
looking so much like
a Sour Patch Kid or something.
It all depends on what that person's point at their life and where they're going through, you know?
Like, it doesn't matter. I mean, like, kid's going to eat chocolate if they exactly. say it's dangerous.
If they're talking about it with their friends, that's it. They're
not unreasonable. I'm middle of the road, Kevin. I get both sides of this.
I have to play devil's advocate. That's my job. Yeah, we can't all be bobbleheads going, yep, no, it's stuff, good stuff. No, I have to.
I kind of am myself. I understand the other side, but it's like.
No, but you're right. Where you have communities that are having financial problems.
There's a few cons, and there's a pound of pros over here that is weighing it down the other way.
Literal it's pound.
Like, it's like pounds. And pounds.
And pounds.
More pounds, folks.
Excuse me. I used that train going through Hingham, because originally I'm from Hingham. Do you know the story of the train?
People who are listening at home. You tell the story about the train.
Like the guy many, many years ago was working for the railroad, and he ran the railroad. And he didn't like hearing the bells of the train coming through Hingham Center, so he stopped it. So those bells and everything sat in Hingham for years and years and years, my whole childhood. I grow up, they want to put the train through. And people fought it. They were trying to sell their houses, going to drop my home value is going to go down. Well, so they put a tunnel under Hingham Center. The train comes through. Boom, like, it's a desirable place now. It's within striking distance of the city. It's even better than it was before. And I think this is going to be another one of those situations.
She's saying it's the Chicken Little thing. The sky's falling, and it isn't really falling, that there is...
People are terrified of change.
It's not... This isn't alcohol.
As human beings, a lot of people are. Yeah.
You know, and you look at the damage that alcohol has done. And my mom, you know... My mom was struck head-on by the drunk driver many years ago. It was a few years ago. And at the time, I was doing the don't drink and drive thing, and then my mom was struck, and it was like, that drug has ruined everything over and over and over and over again. But what I want to bring up, Kevin, and it keeps getting missed, is there's a 3% tax if they vote on it, and then there's the 3% community impact fee on the 3% of the gross of the business. That money is going to be used to pay for the cops that are policing the alcohol issue, the DUIs, the drunk husband beating up his wife, the bar fights. You know, have you ever done anything you regretted the next morning when you were drunk? Your inhibitions go out the window. Your will goes out the window. And if you're not an addict now, or you were an addict and you start drinking, guess what? You're an addict all over again, and it's not really because of weed. It's really not. It's apples and oranges, and I think that's people get really that are pro marijuana don't want that in that same category. It doesn't even belong in the alcohol category. It is not alcohol, you know.
Mm. Well, I will tell you this:
alcohol made me feel like I was gonna die.
Did it?
Time and time again, over Agreed. And over and over. Like, I was going to die tonight, you know?
Well, if this will give you any comfort...
What's the famous Byron Whitman? It used to be O'Toole's.
Still is, I think.
O'Toole's. So nobody, like, still there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not paying any community impact fees.
No.
But you know what I mean? Not saying that the cops are there all the time, but, like, cops are sitting watching for drunk drivers, not stone drivers, you know what I mean? They're not...
I don't know that, but...
Most stone drivers slow down rather than speed up anyway.
I just want to say this last thing before we... Jeffrey, I want to thank you for coming in, at least carrying the conversation. And Ben, for chiming in, finally...
I can't believe nobody called to yell at me.
I know, I was waiting for that, but it didn't happen. If this will provide you any comfort, when we had the vote in about the approval of adult recreational marijuana statewide... the conversation that we had a couple of months later with the state treasurer was that the most highly sought after thing that people wanted after this all took place was a license to open a retail shop to sell adult recreational marijuana. It is, at that time, which is about a year and a half ago, was a highly sought after thing. So, you know what? There are going to be communities that are going to benefit from it. And there are others that gonna, you know, that might have to ponder whether they should change their bylaws and their laws and ordinances to reflect.
The town's got to figure out the towns
what the voters want,
how they're going to get right. the money. So,
Jeffrey, thank you again. We'll have you back in again as always. Too bad we didn't have Guy Glotis in here. Would have been
would have stole the mic.
He would have. But that's what we love, because then you two would be fighting about, give me that mic. All right, Jeffrey Yelenation has been our guest. We're going to step aside. Thank you. Nope, just for you. We're going to step aside just for a couple of moments, and when we come back, the final segment of Monday Night Talk, heard only here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
I'm Bob Smaldone of Budget Blinds, and I hope what happened to me never happens to you. I was driving down Route 3, perfect visibility, and a wild turkey flew right in front of my windshield. Glass in my face, I was startled, and that doesn't even begin to describe the effect. I could have lost control, others could have been hurt, but there was good news. Tiny & Sons replaced my windshield, cleaned up my truck, even gave me some medical attention. Tiny's boys really do a good job.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
I like to say that usually the final segment of the program, it's almost like a meal. You know, you come in, you get drinks, you get an appetizer, you get the entree. This is the dessert portion of the program. And usually it's the finest. And so we have our friends from the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass, located in Brockton. And we have two friends. We got Kim Kokatos, who is joining us.
Making every effort to be sweet.
Wow. Okay. Well, I want to thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
She traveled such a long way. Now, you're the executive director?
Oh, no. Goodness gracious. That's too much responsibility for me.
What would you like to be? What is your title?
I'm actually program and development director.
But you are a director?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I'll take that.
Okay. Excellent. And, of course, we have Chuck Giovannetti, who is he's a repeat offender to the radio show.
This is true.
As is Dory.
Yes, Dory is here.
Dory will be the silent partner, but I'm sure she'll be sniffing around for a treat later on.
She is walking around our legs right now as we speak.
Excellent. And we're here to celebrate our friends from the center and to talk a little bit about their fantastic event that's coming up this weekend, right? It's the ninth annual Tails and Ties Gala.
That's right.
It's a fantastic. Where'd the name come from, Chuck?
Well, that's something that's developed over time. In the past, we've referred to it as our Paws for Celebration, a little play on words, P-A-W-S. But then we kind of kicked it up a little bit and called it Tails and Ties, you know, representing our four-legged friends, as well as those of us that dress up a little bit and make it a little fancy.
I apologize, I'm going to digress for half a second. But you are a member of the board of directors for the shelter?
That's correct. I'm a volunteer with the organization, been with them since we founded back in 2009, and a member of the board. I hold the role of president right now.
Okay, and normally it's Chuck who comes in, or Michelle McKenzie.
Correct.
She comes in, and we were introduced to Kim last year when we were at a Brockton Rocks game.
Which was a ton of fun.
Now, wasn't there another Kim with you?
There was. That was our executive director. We try to be tricky.
Tricky you are.
Tricky,
and,
yes.
And but you had a special friend with you, too.
We did. A special friend who ended up getting adopted, actually, as well as little one. We had the kitten with the broken arm. She healed up well. She had her cast changed every week, and now she's in a wonderful forever home.
And that's what matters, is finding these animals, these pets. And it's not just a dog. It's not just a cat. There are so many critters that you can find over at the center.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we have had bunnies, guinea pigs, ferrets. We had a talking umbrella cockatoo last month.
Oh my God, that's a mouthful.
It was. We had a ferret just in time for the Patriots games.
Nice.
Which was great. He was a big Pats fan, our friend Joey the ferret. And I think last year we even had a hedgehog for a couple of weeks. So a variety of really cool pets that sort of come in depending on what's going on at any given day.
And Chuck, if you could kind of just remind folks as to the beginnings, the very beginnings of the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass, because your organization came in just the time when the MSPCA was actually, they were having issues, I believe, with funding, and there would have been a void had it not been for the center stepping in and going, hey, we're willing to do this, but you have to understand is that we're limited with funds and, you know, we need your help.
Yeah, very true, Kevin. The Animal Protection Center really came about as myself, several volunteers, colleagues of mine, people that worked at the facility realizing that it had been there for so many years serving the community. The MSPCA was during the financial crisis in late 08 into 09. They had made an announcement that they could no longer maintain all of their facilities and were closing one of them, several of them, including Brockton. Folks got together and said, hey, something's got to be done. And it was a lot of community involvement. Folks like yourself, a little further away, folks really close to us, came about and said, we need to just start this up. The nice thing of it that didn't really get a lot of press was that the MSPCA realized that they, too, had a commitment to the area in the facility. And they wanted another organization to take it over. And no one was really stepping up. And that's when, like I said, colleagues, we kind of sat down, got together, put a little business plan together, found some good funding from some great volunteers. The community as a whole really stepped up. And 9 years later, as they would say, we're here and the community recognizes us. And this is one of our annual events to celebrate that.
It was one of the top stories at that time. I was at WXBR in Brockton. I was also working here at the time, but I was more so full-time at the Brockton radio station. It was one of those human interest stories in regards to the, you know, one shelter closing and the need for another, and it was good to report on the success and us here at WATD continuing the success of the shelter as you guys grow and seek the help from the community, because it's important that the community stays involved to help you guys grow and be able to find these pets a home.
That's very true. I mean, like I was saying, it was something that had been there for, at that point, probably at close to 40 years, maybe a little more. Yep. Staff, volunteers, we all felt really, really down about this. We see what we were doing, how the community turned to us for help, how we were able to fulfill that need. And when it came about that the MSPCA was saying, hey, we want somebody else to take over this facility, and a group of us got together, tongue-in-cheek side, it was kind of like, hey, at one point you had to pinch yourself because we're sitting around a room going, we're not an organization. We're a group of people that can make an organization. Mm-hmm. Can we make this happen? And we got a number of folks involved. One of them is our honoree at the gala coming up, Dr. Ron Buffman. He, from Lloyd's Animal Medical Center, stepped up and said, we're behind you on this as well. And he wanted to be a part of that to make that happen. And there's some great stories about meeting in the basement of the medical center to hold our meetings in a room that's about half the size of the one we're sitting in right now, Kevin.
So he's getting the Pause for Applause Award.
That's right, he is. So as one of our founding members, and really someone that I don't think we would have been successful as an independent shelter without Dr. Buffman's support and passion for helping animals in need. Mm-hmm. He not only, Lloyd's Animal Medical Center, they are one of our fantastic partner veterinarians. They were the ones, for example, who took care of little ones cast every single week. And when we have animals with medical needs, whether those are dental abscesses or tumors, very often it's Lloyd's Animal Medical Center that partners with us through our Life is Precious Fund to help those animals and get them healthy so that they can be adopted. And obviously, as we were talking about, you know, who would be a great honoree for us, who is someone who really deserves to be recognized for his work and his help for the animals, Dr. Buffman's name came up almost immediately.
Talk to us about this event. And again, it appears it's going to be a new venue this year.
That's correct. This year we're over at the Stone Forge in Rainham over there on 44 at Route 24.
Ooh. Yes, and we're fancy.
Swanky.
Hence the name Ties.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, right, yeah. not that previous events or venues nope. didn't warrant a tie, but it's nice that it's a fresh look. Talk to us about the importance of these fundraisers, because the shelter has various fundraisers in order to keep the lights on, to be able to have great staff like you, Kim.
Oh, yay. So the shelter really puts as much money as possible into taking care of the animals, the animals' needs, the animals' care and maintenance. And so when we raise funds, the majority of every dollar that we raise, about 82 cents out of every dollar that we raise, goes right back into taking care of our animals. And that's everything from basic care and needs to things like our Life is Precious Fund, which spent $38,000 last year. We had a cat that was hit by a car. We had a dog that came in with breast cancer. We had an animal that had to have 12 teeth removed when it came in. And we pride ourselves on saying, all right, we're not going to say no to this animal. We're going to take this animal. We're going to get this animal healthy and then get it to its forever home. And to do that, we rely on the support of people in the community and really do call ourselves the Community Animal Shelter for Southeast Massachusetts.
And folks, while I'm friends to the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass, I also applaud their efforts. I've been fortunate enough to be invited to the annual event. I was at last year's Tails in Ties Gala. Fantastic fun. And I'm not just saying it because they're here and I'm going, that's what it's a good time.
It is a good time.
Good food, it's a good time, and what's even better, it's for a great cause. And if you will, Chuck, kind of tease us with some of the fun that folks will be able to have at this year's event.
Well, first of all, great meal, great entertainment. We have a DJ on board with us, one of our fellow board members, nice. Spencer. Spencer will be providing the music. We have raffles that are going on, so great prizes. A silent auction for numerous number of things, from trips, little package getaways, good meals. Something that's kind of fun is the balloon burst, where you get to purchase a balloon, and inside that balloon will be a number to a corresponding ticket. Some will be a nice gift card to perhaps a local establishment. Some might be a much more lucrative. So it's a good time there. You also have, we're doing the dance this year, too.
Oh, all sorts of fun and games. That's right. You know, sometimes when you think about a gala, you think about everyone sort of sitting down and using, you know, mom's table manners and very, very stuffy.
Kind of stuffy.
Very, very stuffy. But no, this is a really good time. There's dancing, there's dinner, there are some U2 tickets up for auction. You know, there's a lot of great stuff and good times to be had.
How much planning goes into an event like this, or any event that the shelter puts on, that the center puts on?
Oh, there is a ton of events, but, you know, we like to say that many hands make light work, and we have fabulous, fabulous volunteers. So we have a great committee that runs Tails and Ties. We have people that have been spending a couple of months just getting gift cards and raffle prizes and auction prizes so they can put together those fabulous packages. And we have sort of a detail crew that's been helping with program books and selling tickets and sponsorships. And so every time that we do an event, all of these people who have many, many different talents come and use those talents to help the animals, whether they have a talent for proofreading or a talent for balloon bursting.
So, and just so folks know, A cocktail hour starts at 6 p.m. Dinner promptly at 7. Again, it's at the Stone Forge Tavern and Public House, 90 Paramount Drive in Raynham. Can't miss it. Right off of 44, isn't it?
It's right on 44, yep. Right off of Route 24. Yep. Easy to get at. That was one of our reasons for choosing a different location this year.
Quick access, definitely. What is some? You know, you mentioned volunteers, Kim.
Yeah.
I'm sure that you never get enough volunteers.
No, you know, we really talk about the one of the most important things in the nonprofit world are people who are willing to give their talent and their time. Time really is the new commodity. Yep. You know, I mean, I love everyone who writes a check to the shelter, but people who step forward and give us their time and give us priceless. Their talent, that really is priceless. And we have been very, very lucky in that we have a strong, dedicated core of volunteers. People that will, like, for example, we lost a couple of heating coils in January and the shelter was without heat. We had to evacuate all of the animals in the shelter, but our foster network, our partner veterinarians, our partner friends, all of our volunteers stepped up and said, okay, how are we going to make this work? Can we take an animal for a couple of days? Can we help you with your heating coils? Can we get things back on track? And really saved what could have been a bad situation and turned it into something that was ultimately positive for us.
You know, Kevin, when I hear people ask about volunteers and friends will say to me, oh, I'm not sure, you know, they right away instantly think it's care of the animals, and that's a huge part of it. But there are volunteers who just work on the gala, volunteers who work on our walk coming up in September, right. Folks that do, we have a plant sale coming up later on in the springtime that organize that. Everyone's involved in a different way. Some are more broad through different projects, but others will just be specific to it because some folks are like, oh, coming to the shelter, I'm afraid I'm going to adopt everybody that's there. I'm going to take everyone home with me. And we're like, we'll take anybody. And there's all kinds of things to do, from fellow board members who are good with some technology, mm-hmm. investment services. So, you know, it is a broad range. So if anybody, you know, is thinking about, hey, how can I help out Animal Protection Center or another organization? I don't know if I have the talents they need. Chances are, whatever talents they hold already, it's something that's needed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're speaking with Chuck Giovannetti and Kim Kokatos, both with the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Massachusetts, talking about not only the shelter, talking about their fantastic event coming up this Saturday, Tails and Ties Gala. How can they get tickets if they want to get tickets, or if they want to find out more information about the center?
Yes, the easiest way is to visit our website at www.apcsm.org. You can buy tickets directly, and you can also get email information if you're interested in sponsoring. You can also learn about all of our other programs, everything from our kitten and puppy parties when we have kittens available for socialization, to group tours, and how you can get involved with the shelter, even see a list of our adoptable animals.
Very nice. And you know what? Again, an animal... Myself, it was a couple of years ago when her daughter was over at the dear departed Mount Ida, which is going away. Mm-hmm. Well, not going away. It's actually being taken over by the state. And she was there as a vet tech. And one of the animals that she was working on that was her lab animal was a beagle named Hazel. And I was like, I want a dog, but I want to make sure that, you know, Cassandra is going to take care of it. Well, Cassandra took care of it for the first couple of months, but you know, it's almost as though Hazel is part of the animal, part of our family, not just an animal. Mm-hmm. And not too long ago, we got Hazel, a brother, and Sparky, who got loose today. Sparky, but you know, he was someone seeking a forever home, mm-hmm. that you know we were able to take in, and he's part of the animal. I don't know how we would live without these two animals, and I don't know how folks who are listening out there, maybe. Maybe you're somebody who is looking for a friend, and that's what I see in a pet. It's a friend. It's that, you know, when I come home and I have a bad day.
It's unconditional love.
Unconditional. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. You can't get that from anywhere.
Oh, no. They love you with their whole hearts. And I feel like they know that you've rescued them, our rescue animals.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they know when they're wrong, when they get out the door and they shouldn't either.
That's true. Did he turn around and wink at you before he ran off?
No, but he's been pouting. My missus has told me, Sandy has told me that he's been pouting all evening because he knows that he had done wrong.
Yeah. So. Oh, sure.
I want to thank you both for coming in and, again, talking about the gala. Anything that we haven't touched upon, but you feels really important to telling the listening audience, whether it's during this live program or during the podcast that they may listen to later on.
We always want to emphasize that we are an independent community animal shelter, and we really do rely on the passion of our community, and we work to serve our community. So we always welcome people to come visit us, consider adoption, consider rescue animals. They are the best animals that you'll ever meet. They're fantastic pets.
And I would add to that, as Kim said, we are a community organization involved in the community. We look to the community to serve us. But we want to be able to, the community to support us, but we want to be able to serve the community. So turn to our website, call us up, come for a visit if you have a question. Even if it has nothing to do with adoption, spay and neuter programs, we can put you in touch with the reasonably priced organizations, veterinarian clinics. So, again, we're there to serve the community as well as the community being involved with us.
And I might add that Kim and Chuck and myself would like to see you at the event this coming Saturday. So please go to the website. Kim, the website is again?
It is www.apcsm.org.
And like they said, there's all kinds of fun, raffles, silent auctions. I know last year I put in for a silent auction for a bed for Sparky that he has at the moment. And maybe we'll get him something else this year at the gala. It's a fun time, and it's for a great cause. So you can put it on your calendar. We'd love to see you there, and we'd love to see. Is Dory going to be there? Or is she going to be tucked away?
No, Dory's not. Is not welcome to the event. It is tie. It is tails and ties, but it will be minus the tails at the event.
Minus the puppy dog tail.
So. Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank you both for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
And yes. But this isn't the end, because you'll be back. Now, Kim, you are actually a repeat offender yourself, seeing that you were on.
I am.
Last year when we were at the Brockton Rocks, a fun time we had. And that's it. That's all the Monday Night Talk that we have here for this week. But until next week at 6:15 p.m., we'll pick up the conversation again. Until then, South Shore Live, Stan and the Gang. Stay tuned for that here on 95.9 WATD. Good night.